Homestyle Green, episode 244. The best type of builder is one who really understands building performance. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. This week on the show, I'm speaking with Jason Schurer, who is in Southern California. And I wanted to drop this interview into the feed because it started out, and it is, a conversation about Passive House. But I think it's just really valuable for builders around New Zealand, Australia, anywhere in the world who are on a bit of a journey and wanting to do something more than just standard building. And Jason describes how he's always run his own business, but he's always been a learner. He's always been inquisitive to find out more and to upskill himself. And he's been really inspired to figure out what makes buildings actually work properly. And he describes how initially that led him to look into energy performance and doing some work with Efficiency First California, which was formerly known as the Building Performance Contractors Association. And one thing led to another. He bought a blower door, started doing some air sealing of houses, looking at energy efficiency, and has recently, prior to this interview, become a board member of Passive House California. So quite the journey. But I think it's really relevant how we're on a similar journey. A lot of builders are on a similar journey to Jason's. And I think it's just really encouraging to hear from people like that, to know that you're on the right track if you're thinking about how to do things better. And you don't necessarily have to be a builder either. This is totally relevant if you're a homeowner looking to do a project, or if you're an architect wanting to make things better, or a consultant, or just someone involved in the industry in some way. So here is my chat with Jason Schurer. He's in Southern California. I started out by asking him what it's like there and if it really, really gets that cold. Does it ever really have a winter in Southern California?
Oh yeah, we get down to about 44 degrees sometimes in the winter. Like this morning when I woke up, it was a chilled 55 degrees when I went out for a jog at 7:30 in the morning.
This is an important thing for people to know, because where I am, and I think even parts of southern states, inland, Australia, northern New Zealand, it's warm, and we're known for it being warm and sunny, but people often forget that it gets cold too.
Yeah. I think in the Southern California area, where I'm from, Orange County, LA Basin, we usually don't get into the 30s. If we do, you might be, well, I guess it depends where you're at. I'm about 40 feet above sea level, so we might see 44, 45 degrees on some cold winter nights or mornings. But besides that, I mean, I think today's high was going to be about 70, and I think this weekend our winter temperature for it's going to be like 75 degrees. So we kind of don't really have a really cold winter. Even when we get snow in our mountains, it tends to melt within, a month or so.
I'm going to have to do some quick conversions there. So 32 Fahrenheit for other parts of the world, that's zero. And what are we, 70, 75, that's around about 24 degrees Celsius, so fairly moderate. But you're in the world of energy efficiency now. How did you come into that scene? What sort of motivated you to get into that area that you're working in now?
Well, I've always been my own business owner. I think for the first 5 years I worked for a couple of general contractors back in the early 80s. And it just intrigued me on building techniques. And so when, after I became my own business owner and a general contractor, I was lacking education and then didn't know how to advance myself. So I just started doing some classes and going to like trade shows. And then we ran into this company in California called the California Building Performance Contractors Association. It was a really long name, and even the acronym people couldn't even remember. However, they were teaching us a house as a system. So they had free training for like 3 weeks out in the, you know, in the classroom and out in the field. We'd learn how to go evaluate a home and find the rights and wrongs in them, learn about thermal bridges and interstitial cavities and combustion appliances that were making people sick. And that really intrigued me and made my jaw drop to the floor saying, why isn't this a requirement for all contractors to do? Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it's not. And that was just called, that was just the Building Performance Institute. So that's our national like weatherization program. So you can do it for low income weatherization, or you can do it for homeowners, people who wanted to upgrade their house towards like Energy Star standards.
Yep.
And so going out and buying all the equipment, your infrared cameras, your blower doors, your duct testers, your combustion analyzers, and all these different tools, which cost, you know, $20,000-$25,000.
Yeah.
At the low end was intriguing. And then I was able to go out there and just show my homeowners, look, we're not just looking at after what we can do for you on, you know, on beautiful kitchens and bathrooms and whole house remodels, but we're looking at the whole environment that you live in. And if you have allergies or asthmatic children, or if yourself or elderly people, from our training and what we learned, that we can reduce those problems dramatically in somewhere anywhere above 80 to 90%. We can help you relieve those allergic reactions or any type of, reaction. So we're trying to be proactive instead of reaction on people's homes. And once we started doing that, that whole energy efficiency thing in the United States was released in about 2009. And so we were in development phases of building some custom homes in downtown Huntington Beach, which is it's a surf city where my business is located. And I was just doing, you know, a single, what we call as a long and skinny or a bowling alley house. And I decided, you know, I'm going to start incorporating all the stuff that I learned into it and make it a super energy efficient green home. And so that kind of took off, and then the market crashed, the whole world.
Yeah.
All the banks went under, and we ended up having our loan was actually under IndyMac, which was the first bank that went under, which kind of collapsed everything.
Yeah.
So it was tough to get in there and finish.
So is this a home that were you doing this as a development to then sell?
Yeah, it was an investment for our company. Me and my wife, we went and qualified for it and was doing it. We were actually thinking about moving into it and making it a demonstration home and, you know, have tours. But when the market crashed, it kind of messed everything up. I think everybody's exit plans changed. So we kind of, you know, had to get it on the market and try to sell it. But in the meantime, we had a bunch of sponsors come on board, Mitsubishi, CertainTeed, a lot of innovative products that were introducing their green products at that time. And so we kind of helped our whole county and say Southern California area get introduced to just building better buildings by testing and measuring and installing products that didn't off-gas it, which makes people sick. Our house was very well invited into the neighborhood. You can't tell that it's a green home. It fits right in with all the other beach house communities. And we we started this before Lead for Homes actually was a thing, but we did have a state ran organization called Build It Green, and we did we got it Green Point rated is their certification process. And by the time we were done, we were told by our Green Point rater that it's basically equivalent to a double LEED Platinum home, if there's such a thing. So we had so many points that it was very high up on the scale. And even to this day, 18 years later, I think, or I'm sorry, 12 years later, it's still like number 17 or 18 on the list of the highest recorded homes on their checklist, which is good.
I'm guessing that's more than just energy efficiency to get to that level, is it?
Yeah, it's more about, doing in our area in Huntington Beach, it used to be all oil fields.
Right.
So we're required to do a methane barrier, which is also a radon barrier, which at the time I didn't know is also a vapor barrier. So it made the slab very tight and energy efficient. So we didn't have any gases leaking up from the earth coming into the property and, like radon or methane getting anybody sick. So we did have a methane system or radon system installed. So that was a big plus. And so every little thing
but that had the added benefit that had the added benefit of also being a vapor barrier and probably contributing to some air tightness too.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what it was. Yeah. And so we got several points on our checklist because we were doing that, but it was mandatory because of the existing oil that's in the ground. So certain things like that. So one of the things was you get points, in LEED or a Green Point rated home or a lot of these homes of building a house inside of an infill lot. So there was never ever a home on this piece of land. However, there was an abandoned oil well that was already capped off. So just those certain things. And then coming in with like no VOC paints, which, 12 years ago was, I think there was two or three companies making them at the time. And so just certain technologies. I think we were one of the first in Orange County to install a ductless mini split system, and ours happened to be from Mitsubishi. And so, now we see them all the time, right? You see ductless systems everywhere, except the United States, but we're starting to get real familiar with them now in our areas.
But that's lumber. That's a reverse cycle. So is that a heating and air conditioning efficient heating and cooling system, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mitsubishi is known on their HVAC side, either heating, ventilation, air conditioning, to do a ductless refrigerant system. So we didn't have any air leakage from our duct system because we didn't have any ducts. And they're super energy efficient systems that, because people don't understand that air actually has a weight to it. And when you try to move air from downstairs, furnace of air blower to three stories up, it takes a lot of pressure to do that. Mm. And most homes in downtown areas that are three stories tall with a very leaky home can't achieve heating or cooling their third story. It just doesn't work. But now, due to the technology we have with ducted systems that are pressurized or with no leaks or the ductless systems, then now all this is possible. It's just certain things that we were able to do to the home and incorporate that. And the good thing is I carried that forward through my company. I literally told my wife, knowing what we know now, we cannot go back to building like we used to build. It just is not right. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then I got introduced to Passive House and I said, wow, I need that. But in our area, it was hard to, in the United States, it was hard to find the tradesperson training course. It was easy to find the designer consultant course. Because what we're trying to do is introduce architects to design these things but then they hand it off to builders that don't know Passive House, so they never get built.
How did you first hear about Passive House?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know how I heard about it, but it's been about 4 years. It's, I think, in 2016. I can't remember if I either seen an email or fell across it, but I finally got introduced to Passive House and then just kept on telling myself, I need to take the course. I need to take the course. And then
Do you remember what your reaction to it, knowing what you had already achieved?
My reaction to it was I knew three quarters of what needs to be done in a passive house. I just didn't know that, darn, we need a lot more insulation.
Right.
I knew about the airtightness, insulation levels, and then the high quality windows.
Right. Yes.
So those are two things that, you know, are pretty much mandatory besides the, you know, thermal bridge free materials.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about that.
And is there a good supply of those products now? Can you get good windows where you are?
I think the insulation is a no brainer. You know, as long as you do it right, you can make it as thick as you want. The windows, yes, there's more manufacturers popping up around, actually local too. Today, I just found out that we have one probably about 60 miles away, a manufacturing plant. I think their company name is, I can't remember off the top of my head.
but more and more coming on the scene, making those high performance windows available.
Yeah. And our climate zone doesn't require like a triple paned. We only need a dual paned system, but we still need them, you know, like an airtight. Yeah, casement, I forget what they call them, a one-touch lock and set and lock or something. I forget what it is, but I'm learning more about the window side because I think it's a very important element.
Yeah, that ceiling is the key to get that air tightness when the window's closed. It's got to be properly closed.
Yeah, so by the last time when I signed up for you on Tuesday, the Passive House of California was just renewing their board members. And I sent in my nomination and found out that I actually made the board. So, actually a Passive House California board member. So
you're going to be deep diving into it. That's awesome.
Yeah. My wife says sometimes when I see something, I dive in head first, without checking to see if there's water in the pool, right?
Well, it sounds like you've been a little bit ahead of the curve there already because, like you say, you knew a lot of what was important to making a house really work well. Partly, I'm guessing, because you'd had a bit of time looking around at what hasn't gone well. And going back to the start, you mentioned about going into houses and seeing a 90% reduction in symptoms of what was that, respiratory illness, just general sickness, things like that. How did that actually play out? Where did you track some of those, some of that data around how people responded to being in a better home?
Yeah, I think what it really is, I haven't really tracked it personally. We have worked with clientele that were chemically sensitive, and they demanded we did the best job possible on making sure that whatever we put in their house had the least amount of chemicals as possible. Mm-hmm. So, and what's funny is you mentioned this, I subscribe to the EPA's asthma or lung association emails, and they sent over this white paper that I was able to download today. It's like 450 pages. And really it could have been one page that said, just build Passive House and your clients won't be sick anymore. That would have been the easy solution. But I do know that, you know, if you're controlling the indoor air quality with mechanical ventilation that has heat recovery in it, that not only are you making that indoor air quality better, you're eliminating the the majority of the possibilities of asthmatic people or people with allergies, they don't happen as much. In fact, they'd rather stay indoors than go outside because now the outside's going to be worse than the indoors, right? So we see the papers out there explaining it, but none of these certified, when I was reading the first 30 pages of this EPA document, they're just highlighting all these doctors from all these pharmaceuticals, and it never really got anywhere. I'm like, so all these guys have done all this expert things, but it never said, look at where the person's living. Look at where the person's going to work. It was just like, hey, we've got these medications that make them better. Well, if you ask me, I'd say make the house better, and then the person gets better. Maybe they still have to take medications, but probably a tenth of them, just because we know that the buildings that we are building make the people sick.
I remember going to a Asthma Foundation conference here in Auckland and having almost identical an identical experience. It was a whole series of nurses that got up and told stories about sick clients they'd visited. And then there was a schedule in the program I was looking, and there were all these doctors that were going to come and talk about solutions. And I remember being really excited. I was like, oh, great, they're going to talk about, you know, how to fix this problem. And it was a series of people talking about the developments in drugs and how to improve how they were tracking what drugs their clients were taking and when they were taking them and the preventative drugs. And I just couldn't believe it. I said, is no one here going to talk about what's actually causing the asthma in the first place rather than just prescribing more and more drugs? And I actually had to go and talk to the organizer afterwards and said, hey, look, you really, as an organization, you really need to address this because you're not fixing the root cause of this problem, which is people spending time in moldy, not fit for purpose conditions.
Yeah, and that's what we see. So,
it's kind of scary.
It's just amazing that they're not going to the root cause of what's causing these symptoms. I can understand the allergies, different times of the season. But we do know that the building, the components usually in the building are what are making people sick, and the doctors are not prescribing properly because they're not in the building industry. But they're in the pharmaceutical business, and they know that there's more money to be made on a little, blue or red pill, whichever one you want to prescribe. But in our case, we do know if you just watching some shows that even if you get people on a vegetarian, if you take them off a fast food diet or a really unhealthy diet, people that are diabetes. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of second diabetes or whatever it is, diabetes 2, whatever
type
they call
2,
it.
Yeah, type 2 diabetes.
Because it's self-inflicted because of a diet. Type 2. Thank you. Type 2. There. I'm on a blank. That literally within 3 weeks of being on a good diet, they don't have type 2 diabetes anymore. Mm. So it's the same symptoms. If we see that we can better our buildings by making them more airtight and installing mechanical ventilation with heat recovery systems in them, then the people get better. They get rid of a lot of the symptoms and a lot of the drugs that they're on. And I think that's really where it comes down to being very important for people to understand. So because I'm in that field, I just hooked up with a client that for the past year, he's been trying to find a contractor to rebuild his house because it got water damage to it, and he ended up getting mold illness. And specifically, what you were naming earlier, he got chronic inflammation respiratory syndrome, or SIRS, and he could not find a contractor to put his house back together that would get rid of that, so he can move back in. Literally, he can go, 50% of buildings have had some type of water damage to them if they're over 20 years old. I think that's what the statistics are. And if people that have this SIRS issue or mold illness, sometimes they can walk into a building and within 3 to 5 minutes, they know if that building has had water damage to it because it still has mold in it somewhere. So they're susceptible of getting sick again.
And so that mold, I'm guessing, is not always visible, right? Because it might be interstitial. Moisture inside the walls.
Inside the walls. That's an easier way to say it, right?
Yeah.
Interstitial cavity. So it's usually behind the walls. So this is where mold, this is how mold grows or likes to live. It needs a dark, cold place with moisture and a food source. So if you take away the food source, which is paper, it's hard to take away the wood if you're framing out of wood.
Yeah.
But if you take away how mold travels, and mold mostly travels, 98% of it travels through the air. So if you take away the air gap in between your wall cavities and you make that building airtight, and you don't have a food source and you get rid of the moisture problem, which is vapor, then you pretty much eliminated a mold issue in a home unless you have a catastrophic water leak. So what does that tell you how you have to build a person's house? It means you have to go the passive house standards. And it's simple and easy to do if you follow the instructions from the manufacturers and you follow the passive house standards. You can literally, they say right away that if you build this way, you're eliminating, I think, over 90% of mold issues or moisture issues from coming into the building, which if there's no moisture and no air and you don't have paper for the mold to feed off of, you pretty much eliminated the mold problem. So when I was able to introduce that.
I'm imagining that once people experience that, it is a no-brainer. But do people get it if you're coming in completely fresh and they haven't sort of really thought about these issues? I'm thinking back to your early days, and you mentioned about the investment of going out and getting a blower door and getting all the equipment that you needed. Was there a business model for that, or is it just kind of over time adding that service to your other contracting work? Was that the bulk of your income, was sort of the general contracting and then just adding this stuff in? Or is there a market out there for people who are willing to pay for good advice and getting things fixed?
Kind of, and not so kind of. So when we first started doing all this stuff, we were doing a lot of room additions and remodels and new construction. So when our clients signed up and said, okay, I want a room addition or whatever, we would just go do the stuff for free for them because we just built it into the agreement that, hey, this is part of us, you know, doing it. So whether we're making any money off of it, that was one thing.
They were paying you for a nice kitchen or a bathroom upgrade or an addition or something like that.
Yeah, we had plenty of work. So what we were really doing was learning off of what our equipment can teach us. So that's what was kind of cool about it. And then when the market crashed and then when the Obama administration came into place, they started doing that green collar workforce, training all the people that were out of business due to the crash of the market. It was mainly set up for construction workers to get back into learning how to do energy audits through the BPI standards, which is a national standard. And so what we did, because I had all the equipment and I was trained in BPI and I was certified through BPI, I became a national trainer. I was traveling around the country training contractors, probably, I would say, you know, maybe 20 or 30 a month for about 4 or 5 years on how to just build better buildings that don't leak air and you can downsize their equipment, you know, their HVAC and make it tight just by air sealing and better insulation techniques, but then learning how to check all the gas appliances. The thing is, we mass produced a bunch of what we called our energy auditors. The problem was we didn't have contractors on board that knew how to look at that energy auditor's report and do the work, because we didn't train the energy auditor. I mean, we didn't train the technicians out in the field. There was some training out there. It was called the installer class. Now, yeah. The installer class was more towards the air sealing and insulation and how to install it into a house properly. So it's kind of like the same thing with passive house. Most of the people that are getting trained in passive house are doing the design consultant side. They're not doing the tradesperson side. So even though in California we see a lot of – we see passive houses going up, they're mostly educated homeowners that went through the class themselves, or their architects learning passive house themselves so they can start selling it to clients. So I see the same thing going again. We're training the wrong group of people. We should be training – the technicians out in the field. So when the architects design it, the technicians know, all right, I know what to do. I was trained to do this. So hard thing for us right now is trying to find the technicians, the different tradespeople out there to build to passive house standards, because it's so new in our area, even though it's been around for a long time, we don't set up the training for the people out in the field.
That's it sounds like the there were some policy some policies introduced that helped to kickstart that demand for the BPI program. Was it reliant on having that sort of federal grant money or some impetus that created a demand for it, or was there just an organic demand for people to get their homes looked at?
Well, I think there was federal grant money to go out and train individuals, whether they were technicians, contractors, or just people trying to get into a new career. So there was a lot of them out there that got their certifications. The thing is, they needed to renew them every 3 years. So you've seen a mass production of green collar workforces going out and getting the wrong certification. Right. Even though it was a good certification, I just think personally it was the wrong route. We went and got something that required $25,000 investment, right? Instead of training technicians to where, here's a company that needs my certification, because this became a national standard for every state. If you were able to get your homeowner rebates or incentives for picking a contractor that was certified in the BPI technology or standards, then they were able to go get them. You know, we were getting our homeowners $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 rebates when other companies were only getting them $1,000 to $1,500. Just because they didn't own the equipment and the things they were going after weren't installed properly, so they couldn't get the rebate on them. Just kind of a way to get out there and train a bunch of people and said, yeah, look what we did. Ooh, we trained the wrong people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was the issue. So I'm hoping with this new administration that's coming in now, the Biden administration, with the Green New Deal, this is what Passive House California is trying to do right now. And hopefully Passive House throughout the nation here in the United States is, let's go out there and start training the tradespeople. So when an architect designs this, the builder is able to build it properly because they're trained towards the Passive House standards.
And does there need to be any changes to minimum requirements of general building standards or code requirements, or do you think that'll take care of itself with the market demand?
Well, that's another issue. Even before the market demand in the BPI situation, it kind of faded away because the rebates went away. When the utilities didn't have to give away millions of dollars to make things more energy efficient, then they stopped the program. So it's whether it's voluntary or mandatory, we have a system called the International Residential Code, or the IRC or something like that. And we mm-hmm. have got the electrical, mechanical. However, they're saying this is what you need to do to meet the new code requirements. But what it doesn't say, it still doesn't protect the home from getting moisture issues in it. And if you look at our industry as a whole, our biggest industry in repairs and remodeling and restoration is moisture damage to existing buildings. And why do we have this system that's been established in Germany or Canada at first, and then Germany actually took it over, supposedly, I think. Somehow something went weird there. but we implemented this thing called the Passive House Standards, and we know it does what it says it's going to do, and it works mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. with very low energy bills. However, our international building codes don't say, hey, this is the standard we're going to go by. If we're doing everything the same as any other builder's doing, it's just instead of a 2x4 wall, maybe in my climate zone, we do a 2x6 wall. And we're already building 2x6 walls. Installing exterior insulation. And a lot of people are going to say, well, we already do that. Not in Southern California. County has been pretty progressive. Northern California has been really progressive. They've taken on things that say you have to build this way. Yeah. Southern California, we're kind of lackadaisical, and we really don't like, oh, no, we don't really care. Not that big of a deal. However, when you see, we have to force people into things. And then they say, well, we don't force you into it. It's if the supply there, then the humans will create a demand. So what I'm really glad to see is that Elon Musk kind of stuck his head out there and said, look, I'm going to build this all electric vehicle. It's going to cost over $100,000. It's only going to sit two people, but people will buy it because it's all electric and it'll be the fastest car on the road. Then he came out with his Tesla Model S's, and now it's the Model T and the X and the Y and the whatever.
Yeah.
And now the car companies are freaking out going, we need to go all electric. I think when we start seeing that the car companies are going to be getting rid of their combustion engines and forcing everybody to buy an electric vehicle, now we're seeing our in-home product manufacturers, such as water heaters, heating and air conditioning systems, our refrigerators are already done it. But when they start going towards heat pump technology, well, heat pump technology happens to be electric. Mm-hmm. So now you're starting to see these manufacturers, whether it's a car or a product that goes into any building, forcing everybody to go in an all-electric home. You're going to start seeing homes built a lot better because we're adapting these things, and people are going to demand a safer, a healthier home with great indoor air quality that's durable and doesn't fall apart. So,
and I think the great thing about that is the market doesn't feel like it's being forced. It becomes aspirational. You know, people don't think of being forced to drive a Tesla. They aspire to it. And I think the same can be true for Passive House. It's not something that people would be forced into this airtight building with windows that actually work. It should be something that people want to have for themselves and wouldn't go back to anything else once they'd experienced it.
Yeah, and I see, yeah, and that's what's kind of good about our industry. Look, maybe I don't want it mandatory because then I'll have too much competition.
It's a bit of a balance, really, isn't it? Because you've got to have those incentives to get things moving. But really, once people experience it, you know, once you take your first drive in an electric car, it's pretty hard to go back.
Yeah, and that's what people are seeing. I mean, it's kind of like when the last administration came in and they relaxed on the car manufacturers to where, oh, we're not going to care about the gas mileage, or you know, or any of that. You can just go back and relax. And they're like, well, wait a second. California's not lifting their restrictions. So we're going to be selling cars at all. California's our biggest market.
Yeah.
Why are we going to build cars differently for other states when we can just build them one way and ship them through? They said, no, we're going to keep, we'll keep our goal to get the best gas mileage possible. And so you see that happening. And I just think that, you know, with the population in my area and literally I think I'm maybe one out of three people in Southern California or maybe Orange County area that have the, you know, certified passive house tradesman certificate that I can, you know, market that and say, this is what we do as a company. It's a great advantage to me. I think, you know, being ahead of the curve and doing stuff before everybody else kind of makes me look like that guy that's in a conspiracy theory, like, oh, this is the only way you should build. But hey, when you can test and measure it and prove your energy use and how your indoor air quality is fantastic and your clients, the only complaint, you know, when you get that phone call from your clients 2 years later, you're like, oh, what broke? No, it's like, hey, we just bought another Tesla. We need a couple more solar panels. Can you do that for us? It's like, all right. Good job. Yeah, you know, their homes back because they want more work, not because something broke down. And that's kind of our that's kind of our motto. We like to see that, you know, the not only is it measured home performance, but we're taking on the path to net zero energy or positive energy, negative embodied carbon, and the passive house standards or that technology that comes with it. In the long run, what that usually what that does for the homeowner, it gives them it literally gives them better comfort, it gives them better indoor air quality, and it gives them a safer and more durable home, which in the long run it uses less energy. So, you know, it just makes sense, and it doesn't cost any more to build that way. Now, there's one other thing I really kind of want to add to this is that I was doing some research and thinking about this. It's like, who is the biggest passive house builder in the nation? And people, I was asking this question to this one of my colleagues the other day. He's like, I don't know who, tell me. I go, it's Habitat for Humanity.
Yes, that's I have heard that. Amazing.
Yeah. So here you go, a nonprofit that builds low-income homes for well-deserving people. And they're like the biggest builder that I'm pretty sure I can say that in the nation that actually tells their clients, look, you're going to get a passive house. It's kind of sad that you're not going to have an energy bill, but that's kind of what the end goal is. And it's like, hey, that makes sense. When they're putting their sweat, labor, and, you know, their blood, sweat, and tears into a project that they're helping their whole community build. And then at the end, they can all say, what's, you know, they can fight about who has the lowest energy bill in that month. hopefully it's in the negatives, who got the most money back or who, you know, that's a good feeling. And
absolutely,
you know,
and it's really achieving that higher purpose of that Habitat for Humanity is providing adequate fit for purpose shelter for people in need. And, you know, if it's good for that demographic, it's good for everyone.
Yeah. And I think that's what really makes sense, Matthew, is that if we can just do a better job and it's the right thing to do, and we got 25 years of proof that this stuff works, granted, it's not, you know, 25 years might not seem a lot to a lot of people, but, you know, the first passive house is built. I think it was a fourplex building, and I can't even pronounce the name, so I won't say it, but it's in Germany by what's his name? Dr.
Wolfgang Frost.
Yeah. Wolfgang Frost. There you go.
Yep.
I should know that if I'm going to be on an interview and talk about it. And as they do their passive house tests in when the buildings were built in 91 or whatever, and they come back, I think, in 2016 before they put solar panels on or whenever the last time they – I think it was 15 or 20 years later they test again. And they're still right in the same range of what they were built in. They're still at passive house levels.
Yeah.
The only thing, the only maintenance they had to do to those buildings was weather stripping around doors and windows. Now, that's an incredible job on a building that's well built. And now I think they just added solar panels on about 4 years ago. Now they are what they call is the Passive House Plus, because now they're actually generating more power than they're using. I mean, I think everybody can have their own home that's their own power plant, and we can be dependent on ourselves instead of utilities and brownouts and wildfires because of things. And you know, we do have gas explosions here across the nation, usually on a monthly basis. There's some gas line that explodes and wipes out a home and several neighbors' homes. And it's just horrifying to hear that stuff. And so our goal as professionals in the industry and as being either a remodeler or a builder, if there's technology out there that everybody says, hey, we build the best, well, then go out and prove it. I want you to prove that you build the best. And if you don't know a blower door or a duct tester or any of these combustion appliances, then you can't prove that you build the best. Until then, you need to keep your mouth a little bit more quieter and start educating yourself and getting out there and doing the right thing for your clients. And that's build passive house.
Where can people find you, Jason, and connect with your all the great things and services that you've got on offer?
Okay. Well, my name is Jason Scheuer, and that is German, but I don't know a lick of it. And I am a building scientist and a forensic building investigator, and I work with Best Techs Contracting, Design, Build, and Remodel. And we are located in the Southern California area in a city called Garden Grove. And we're real close to like Long Beach Airport, John Wayne, not far from LAX. We're in basically in the metropolitan area of LA. And you can reach me or go to my website at my company name, which is Best Techs, as in short for technicians, contracting.com.
Jason Scheuer there of Best Techs Contracting. That's Best Techs, T-E-C-H-S, contracting.com. And I'll also link up his website on the show notes for this episode, which you can find at homestylegreen.com/244 for episode 244. I really like Jason's story about wanting to find out more, wanting to find out and learn how buildings actually work and how he could do his work as a builder, as a contractor, to make better outcomes. And he sort of set about doing that regardless, really, in what his clients wanted. On the surface, he knew that he could have a big influence on the health and the ultimate performance of that building by simple things like putting more insulation in than what was required, doing air sealing. Air sealing is just such a big thing. It's here in Australia, in New Zealand, Australia, just know that it's coming. It's the way forward. It's such a well-tested and accepted part of building in general. We just need to get our heads around it and start doing that, because the benefits from creating an airtight envelope and then having good ventilation added to that building can be more beneficial than just simply adding more insulation. And it's great to have the confidence that you're on the right track if you're thinking about sealing up the building when you're doing any other work, and renovations are a great opportunity to do that. What do you think? Yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts, feedback. You can email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com. I contacted Jason originally because I was looking for more interviews for the Passive House podcast, and I just wanted to bring you this episode in this feed because I think it's such a relevant story to anyone who's looking at building better places. to live. So this may well, at some time in the future, appear on the Passive House podcast as well. But in the meantime, definitely check that out, because if you are listening to this show, then you're going to love the Passive House podcast, which is produced by the Passive House Accelerator. And I have the great privilege of being one of the co-hosts of that show. So you check that out wherever you get your podcasts, and also all the great resources and the community that is over at PassiveHouseAccelerator.com. Well, that's it for me for this week. Thank you very much for listening in. Now go make a better place to live.